and thank you for joining us for episode 29 of The Backside of Water, a podcast devoted to the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. I'm Harrison Ownby.
And I'm Alex Stewart, and for this episode, we will be exploring Snow White's Scary Adventures!
That's right. This attraction represents the film that started it all. Even though Walt is famous for quoting that it all started with a mouse, it should be noted that the Disney Company wouldn't be nearly the powerhouse it currently is without the wild success of Snow White.
Now, in this episode, we will, of course, explore Snow White's Scary Adventures, the attraction, but we also want to take some time to explore the history and story behind the film that inspired this iconic ride.
Well, Al, what are we waiting for? Let's explore the exciting, thrilling, and scary world of Snow White's Scary Adventures.
The year was 1934, and Walt Disney was as busy as he had ever been in his career up to this point. Coming off the success of his Mickey Mouse shorts of the late 1920s, Walt was moving full bore creating his Silly Symphonies. These Silly Symphonies were primarily musically focused shorts that were wildly popular for the time. But as always, Walt was not satisfied sticking with the status quo. He wanted to break boundaries, push limits, and make a lasting mark on the world, and he knew exactly how he was going to do it.
That's right. Walt decided he was going to be the first person to perfect the feature-length animated film. We do need to have a short aside here. To silence the film history purists, it should be noted that there were already feature-length animated films produced at this time in the 1930s. A lot of folks get kind of their feathers ruffled a little bit when Walt Disney is credited with creating the first animated feature-length film, since he wasn't technically the first to do this.
Yeah, it is funny, especially when you take film classes at the college level. This is like one of those big things where they're pretty vocal about it.
But
it
I didn't know that. Oh. I think that Snow White was such an it's a class of its own, you know. So it really was a first, and as much as anything can be a first, you know.
Oh, without question. I think that it should be noted that the animated features that did exist at this time were wildly experimental and really very inaccessible to wide audiences due to their abstract and incoherent nature. The majority of people always point to German filmmakers for their very abstract exercises in color experimentation. They were pretty much really poor excuses for feature-length films. But that is, of course, personal opinion. That these films were poor quality. There's a lot of people who say that they were absolute masterpieces, but you can think that, and I can think what I think.
Absolutely.
Which is, they're boring.
I didn't know they existed until like a minute ago, so I personally think they're boring, but Al's opinion is the same kind of opinion that general audiences agreed with. They weren't really going to the movies to see weird colors and art house stuff. The animated features at the time were really not intended for wide audiences either, and this is where Walt saw a gap that he was more than able to fill.
Now that Walt knew he wanted to tackle feature-length films, he had a few hurdles to overcome. Firstly, he needed subject matter. That's one of the keys. For this subject matter, Walt turned to, of all places, fairy tales. This may be one of those ruining the magic topics in regard to why he chose fairy tales. If you want to think that Walt chose fairy tales because of the fanciful nature of the genre, fast forward about 50 seconds of this show so you can keep that magic intact. But honestly, the reason why Walt chose fairy tales was for one main reason: the public domain.
Since fairy tales are so old, they fall into the public domain. Because of their age, Walt didn't have to pay anybody for the rights to these stories, which is very shrewd business.
I completely agree. So Walt sifted through a ton of fairy tales in circulation and chose out of all of them Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. There's a bunch of different theories as to why Walt chose Snow White over all of them. Primarily, the one that most people go back to is the big ensemble cast that we'll talk about was his main reason for choosing the one that he did. But once he'd found his story, he wasted no time getting a pitch together for his animators. Now, this story is really awesome. Late one winter night, Walt gave a select group of staff members 50 cents to go across the street and grab some dinner. When they returned, they were led to a vacant soundstage where Walt was waiting under the illumination of a single spotlight. Walt then proceeded to spend the next few hours dramatically telling Snow White's story. He embodied every character using masterful voices to bring each of its own characters new life. His body raised up as the action grew and sank as the story became more sinister, him taking the posture of the evil queen disguised as the bedraggled old hag. By the end of the story, the staff's response was a mixture of pure awe and raw emotion. Each and every member who was invited that night vowed to do anything it took to make this film a reality. Walt had his story, and now he had the hearts of those on his team. Now came the work.
Yes, and I would have loved to see that. I've read about this performance that Walt gave when he acted out Snow White, and it came to him really all at once. And not every movie came to him that way, but Snow White did. Snow White, it was a flash of lightning for Walt Disney, and he saw everything down to the tiniest details. And he would sometimes, during production, he would start to launch into it again and recover it again, and he could get lost in telling the story, and people would realize that a few hours had been gone by, and they had listened to just Walt regale them once again with this amazing vision that he had.
And so it's amazing to see. Yeah, sorry, I didn't. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that the response, like we said, was awe and raw emotion. There actually were animators and their wives who were in tears by the end of this experience. It's one of those where it is just such an iconic moment in Disney history that if you look it up, you can see multiple accounts of the way this story went down. And everybody who was involved that night knew that there was something extremely unique that had happened and something that was really special that had happened.
Agreed. And so with all that passion, Walt wasted no time developing the story early in 1935, which is the middle of the Great Depression, which is, mm-hmm. Keep that in mind. So the story hit quite a few monumental snags during this period. Walt had worked on nothing but animated shorts for his entire career, so creating a story that would captivate people for a total of 83 minutes was no small task. And one of the largest and most famous hurdles during this period was the naming of the dwarfs.
Ah, here come the conspiracies.
Did someone say conspiracy?
Oh, great. I should have known.
Hello, I'm Fox Scully, world-famous Disney conspiracist.
Is conspiracist even a word?
Oh! I see. I've got a fellow skeptic in the room. Another no. Skeptic. I like this guy.
No. I was just asking a question.
Well, what is this I hear? What is this I hear about you discussing the names of the seven dwarves without me present? Your listeners need to know the sinister underbelly behind this dastardly Disney cover-up.
Oh, look. We gotta check the security on our studio. These characters keep getting in here, but Scully, there have been hundreds of people like you who have spent many a year trying to read unnecessary things into beloved Disney classics. But for the sake of sharing the truth about this topic, I'm going to let you say whatever you're going to say, because I like hearing people out, and I think that's fair.
I'm just curious for entertainment's sake.
Well, you sit down and listen, and I'll tell you the truth. Someone is too afraid to share the news themselves, and I'll allow myself the opportunity to share the facts that Walt Disney named the seven dwarfs after the various stages of drug addiction of a certain kind that I cannot name, as this is a family show.
Well, that sentence did contain one piece of accurate information. This is a family show. So you got that, Fox. Well done. But Walt did actually take on the task of personally naming the dwarves, as they had no names in the original telling of the fairy tale. But he didn't take the names from the various stages of drug whatevers.
You can't stand there. and tell me that Walt didn't intentionally set out to name them by the way he did without having some sort of ulterior motive.
Actually, we can, and your sentence, it contained like 42 double negatives, so I'm not really even sure quite what you said, but... Anyway, the drug addiction that you referred to has hundreds of symptoms that manifest differently in every user. So, in essence, the addiction doesn't even have remotely close enough to common symptoms for Walt and his crew to name the dwarves after them. I'm sorry, Fox, but your conspiracy just doesn't hold water. Now, if you'll excuse us, we've got to get on with the show.
It's not the first time that the voice of opposition has been silenced. It's real original. This is exactly what I expected from Sheeple. You can shut me out of this office, close the door on me, but you can't shut the door on the truth. The truth is out there. The truth is out
Wow. Can you believe there are people out there who still actually believe these things, like, wholeheartedly?
Wait, Fox, Scully? Wasn't created for comic relief?
Well, he totally was. And when we say comic relief, we use that very lightly. Clearly, from our reviews, a lot of people don't like our little sketches, but...
Well, it's not our fault these people keep getting into our studio.
They keep bombarding our studio. We can't control this.
You think
we like
this?
We get a lock on the door.
Yeah. Well, we can't, though. We're too broke.
That is true.
So I bought a dog, always... but he doesn't do anything, so...
He just tears up the blinds when the sun goes down.
Exactly.
But so the character of Fox was created for comic relief, but he also represented a variety of Disney troll that has existed for many decades that claims the dwarfs were named after the various symptoms of drug addiction.
Oh, man, that is ridiculous.
It really is. It was so prevalent through the airwaves that Snopes, the famed website that debunks claims or reinforces claims, has an entire... Sorry.
Uh-oh. You've been exposed to the truth and you're coughing now.
Oh, my word. For those of you... So on the last episode, we talked about how we were going to release two episodes in 1 month, and... We're still hoping to get this out within the same month as the Pinocchio episode, but I got a severe case of laryngitis.
Of the blues.
A Kraft macaroni and cheese, the blues. And
he shared a harmonica with a blues man, and, well, the rest is history.
I inhaled, and there was nothing good that came of it. But I got a horrible case of laryngitis to the point where I couldn't talk at all last week. And one, being a teacher, that's like the worst thing to ever happen in your job. And two, being a podcaster, it's awful because if I were to have recorded, that little coughing, horrific spell you just heard would have been 10 times worse.
It would have been the scary adventures with Backside of Water is what it would have been.
Yeah,
Snow White.
Yeah.
And I offered. I said, "Al, let me just cover your part. Nobody'll notice." But he didn't really take me up on it. So
I wanted to. Anyway, I wanted to see how that would turn out.
That could be pretty interesting. Maybe we'll do that for like a. I mean, April Fool's is kind of coming up, right?
So that's true.
Anyway,
that's true.
When it comes to debunking stuff, though, it's never once and for all on the interwebs because there are still genuinely people that think Walt Disney's head is cryogenically frozen, right? But that is the final word for this podcast, that it's not drug-related.
It's absolutely definitive, 100%. There is no truth whatsoever to that claim. So if you ever have friends, which every Disney fan out there will have friends who are like, "Hey, you heard about how they named the dwarfs, right?"
Yeah. Well, and also, that was kind of a thing at the time, too. Somebody brought that to Walt's attention. I forgot what. They said, "Hey, Dopey, this could mean something different." And he said, "Well, Shakespeare used it. So I'm sticking with the original Dopey, which is just kind of a fool, like a silly person." And the more recent slang of, like, dopey in the sense that, you know, somebody who uses dope, that's not what Walt intended. He said, I'm going for something timeless. I'm going to ignore slang. This isn't Shakespeare. Let's go for it. So
I think that I didn't know that person. I'd never heard that story before, but I think that it's a great story. Harry, that's why you're such a pal, because you give out such great information.
I fill in the cracks.
You fill them in well. Now, it's true that the creative team did have trouble coming up with a name for the dwarfs. In 1912, a play about Snow White was released, and the dwarfs' names were, listen to this, they're real good. Blick, Flick, Flick, Bug's Life?
Oh.
Now, where's Fox Scully when it comes to those conspiracies? yeah. Sorry, I digress. Blick, Flick, Glick, Plick, Snick, Wick, and Quee. I feel like Quee needs to be said like a Quee!
Yeah, agreed.
But Walt understandably didn't choose these names. The creative team compiled a list of over 50 names, including, these ones are doozies, Jumpy, Dizzy, Hickey.
Yeesh.
Yeah, that one, I'm glad they didn't go with that one. Wheezy, Baldy, which I'm starting to fear is my dwarf name, Gabby, Nifty, Sniffy,
ooh.
Swift, Lazy, Puffy, Stuffy, Snubby, Shorty, and Burpy. All of these names.
Wow. Yeah, there's definitely a bunch of just wild animators at work.
I got it. Puffy, Stuffy, and Tubby. That's good.
Yeah, it's like, go home.
So thankfully, after a ton of thought, this took months to do, the team finally settled on Doc, Grumpy, Happy, Sleepy, Dopey, Bashful, and Sneezy. These names were chosen most logically because the characteristics were so easily embodied in their character animations.
Yes, and something else about Dopey. They were having a hard time characterizing Dopey because they didn't want to be cruel. They didn't want to portray him like he was disabled or anything, or like he was necessarily a child. So they ended up animating him. They went through a lot of different phases. But what worked really well for Dopey is basically animating him like a dog, because they'd had work with Pluto and stuff. And if you kind of watch it, you're like, oh, Dopey is kind of like a lovable dog.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Names weren't the only hiccup in the production, though. Believe it or not, Snow White was originally intended to be a gag-filled laugh fest, with Walt even offering $5 to anyone who contributed to gags that made it into the final cut. Over time, though, Walt began to think that the story was suffering from all the comedy. The film lacked heart because of all the gags. Again, Walt was used to making shorts and gags entertain guests on the short term like that, but an 83-minute film, not the kind that Walt was trying to make, he was going for story, and he didn't want gag after gag. Walt needed more than just gags to fill his film. He decided to make the prince less bumbling and clownish, instead opting for a more handsome and charming Prince Charming. They also morphed the fat and silly witch to something much more menacing and scary.
And it's amazing to see because, I mean, of course you had some more serious topics with things like the silly symphonies, but this was the first foray that Walt took, obviously long-form story, and it's interesting to understand that Walt knew that gags only had a specific time frame, that you couldn't laugh through 83 minutes of a movie. Instead, you actually had to have a little bit more behind it, which shows Walt's inherent understanding of what good story truly was.
Right. You can either have laughs the whole time, like Airplane, or you can tell a story, but you really can't do both.
Exactly.
This is quite visionary for Walt, because people just thought cartoons were kind of disposable funnies anyway. So he was looking past that, and he's like, no, this is a genuinely awesome medium for telling incredible stories.
Yeah, there's something more here.
Mm-hmm.
So once they finally worked out all the snags and story issues, Walt then set the team to animating this final product. Now, he had initially told his brother Roy that this venture was going to cost a hefty $250,000. Which during that time was a mountain of money. Now, for those who
still
don't
is.
Have... Oh, it I mean, it, yeah, but... I mean, you look
Not
at
for
even
a film.
The... And especially an animated film. Because, again, the things that you also have to think about with this is the fact that they can't just go out and find a set somewhere. They literally have to draw everything from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who aren't super familiar with a lot of Disney history, Roy Disney was Walt Disney's brother, and he was the guy who was pretty much in charge of funding absolutely everything that came out of Walt Disney's mind. So
yeah.
From what you hear on this podcast, you can understand that this guy was under significant amounts of stress
yes.
trying to find this money. So he wasn't super excited about this $250,000 price tag, especially on something that wasn't tested, that wasn't tried, wasn't true yet. The thing that was even scarier to him is that this $250,000 price tag was 10 times more than any Silly Symphony had ever cost for production. He didn't like the idea one bit, but Walt got what Walt wanted, as always, and Roy, ever the patient and long-suffering brother, made sure the financing was there for him.
Yes, everything was moving smoothly until Walt began to realize that taking on a feature like this was an even bigger task than he originally thought. It was monumental, in fact. He eventually had over 750 artists working on the project. Also, the rotoscoping process, which is animating subjects to look photorealistic, was difficult, time-consuming, and, of course, expensive. So Walt got the itch also to animate it in color, which at the time was seen as absurd, as color technology was considered a silly fad that just wouldn't last. But as yet another testament to Walt's vision, that decision turned out to be a very expensive yet worthwhile one. Because of these factors, the price tag for the film reached over $1.4 million. I actually also want to say there's a great story. They couldn't have done this without the help of a guy at Bank of America named Joseph Rosenberg. Mm-hmm. And they ran out of funding. I think Walt and Roy had borrowed all the money that they could. And they were just, the film wasn't done. And they were about to just eat their lunches because they had paid for something and invested everything that wasn't done yet and couldn't be shown to people. So they flew out to New York, had a meeting with Joe Rosenberg at Bank of America, showed him rough cuts of Snow White. And Joe Rosenberg said, "We have got to finance Disney for this film." He told him, he sat very quietly and watched it. He was kind of a hard guy to read, a banker, but when he finished it, he said, "Mr. Disney, you're going to make a hatload of money with this film." And then gave him the rest of the money that he wanted. And turns out Joe Rosenberger was a good banker because they did. They made back what they spent on it and much, much more. And he remained kind of their contact for financing at Bank of America for a long time. So anyway, it's kind of interesting to see the people that you wouldn't really think really made things happen, but Joe Rosenberg and Bank of America have a really important role in Snow White.
Well, and it's amazing because I don't think that a lot of people realize how insanely tight the money was. I mean, it was down to the point where Walt Disney even mortgaged his own home against this film in order to bother. So when Harry says that it was literally down to the last dollar, it was literally down to the last dollar to get this movie out. And, I mean, another thing in context, being a nerdy film teacher, this is something that I talk about with my students all the time, is the significance of these moves. First of all, with the sound synchronization that Walt ventured into with Steamboat Willie back in the late 1920s, that was an out there idea. People thought, again, that sound in movies was going to be a complete and utter flash in the pan. And then when it started to take hold, I mean, even guys like Charlie Chaplin, huge players in that game at that time, refused to pick up on it because they thought it was, one, cheap, and two, they thought that it was never going to take off. So Walt Disney was the opposite. He was so on board from the very start. Same thing with color. To put it into history and historical context, this movie is being produced in the mid-1930s, released in 1937. The first full-length color film to be released is The Wizard of Oz in 1941.
Wow.
So here he is, 4 years before even the first feature-length film is released in color, spending the significant extra money to colorize this entire film simply for the sake of the future, which I think is absolutely brilliant because there was no technology at that time to even project the film in color. So it was really, and that's where Roy was like, "Forget this, Walt. This seems like such a stupid idea." But Walt knew what was coming down the road.
Yeah, he did.
So not only was Walt feeling the pressure from those close to him like Roy and his wife Lillian, who both encouraged him to stick to shorts, but he was also feeling the pressure from his peers in Hollywood. This project of Walt's was seen amongst his contemporaries as, for all intents and purposes, a joke. They called it, very famously, Disney's Folly. None of this, though, made Walt back down from doing what he knew he needed to do. And finally, on that December 21st night of 1937, Walt Disney premiered his feature-length film to the world.
And to say that Snow White and the Seven Dwarves was a smash hit would be an understatement. Just to put this in perspective, audience went insane over the feature-length animated film. I mean, critics praised the animator's artistry and Walt's storytelling skills. But this, to this day of this recording, remains, if you adjust for inflation, the highest grossing animated film of all time.
Wow.
Still to this day.
Wow.
Yeah. So they made, in today's money, it would be a $1 billion movie.
Wow.
It made $1 billion. Yeah. Yeah. So, holy cow, audiences were, Walt was right. I mean, I can't imagine the stress of like, well, if this movie fails, I don't have a house.
I got nothing.
To the bank for millions, I'm ruined. I mean, I'm going to Mexico, I guess, and starting a new life.
thing that I think is hilarious is everybody looked at Walt Disney as like this ultimate corporate money monger. When you see these things, he wasn't in it for the money. He was in it because he was basically an adrenaline junkie, a fear seeker. And that's what always shocks me, is that over the time, now that Disney is so monetarily successful, everybody looks at the Disney company, starting with Walt Disney, as this money-grubbing, hungry corporate entity. But that is definitely historically not anywhere near where they started.
No, not at all. And his contemporaries, Disney's contemporaries, awarded him an honorary Academy Award for the effort. The film made the company so much money that Walt was able to build a brand new state-of-the-art studio with its earnings and still have some left over. In fact, the studio built by Snow White money is the studio that they still use to this day.
Which I feel like we needed to do a Did You Know Disney episode about the studio. When you work for the Walt Disney Company, you can actually tour the studios as a cast member, which is an awesome perk. And a lot of cast members, if we do have cast members who are listening and don't realize that that's something you can do, or if you haven't done it before, whatever you do, make sure that you make an effort to get up there, because it is the ultimate Disney experience to go up there and walk through the studios that Snow White built, because it is... It's basically the exact same layout that Walt Disney designed back in the 1940s. And you walk around there, you can see Walt's office. I mean, I think that they give tours where you can actually go into Walt's office itself. You can walk past the sound stages that they shot things like Mary Poppins on. It is breathtaking pieces of entertainment history. So that is something...
If you're a cast member, don't miss out on that.
Oh, without a doubt. And if you are looking for yet another reason to become a cast member, that is another reason, because all you have to do is flash that badge and they just treat you like your family up there.
That's amazing.
So all of this success of this film totally makes sense that Walt Disney would add this to his new venture at Disneyland. Simply as a metaphorical gesture, that shrine in the... Or that post in the sand that helps him remember exactly the roots from which they came. Mm-hmm. On opening day of the park, guests could ride through the story that made everything that led up to Disney's creation and beyond possible. Now, Imagineers wanted audiences to feel like they were walking around the story in Snow White's footsteps. This walking in her footsteps approach is key in how the story unfolded on the original version of this attraction. Guests would walk through a queue area that was decorated with various pieces that foreshadowed the scary journey that Snow White would go on during the ride. Some of these interactive queue features have been ported into the current iteration of the attraction as well. From there, guests would board ride vehicles in the shape of the dwarfs' beds, each seating area being named after a given dwarf in the group.
Right, and from those dwarf beds, guests would ride through the story, experiencing it through the eyes of Snow White. But... Of course, there was a problem. Guests apparently didn't realize that they were supposedly taking on the role of the princess. So because of this, many guests would wonder why the Imagineers just forgot to add the star of the film into the attraction.
Which is hilarious. Which,
that would be quite an oversight. It'd be pretty funny if that was just somebody covering up. You're like, oh no, it's from Snow White's perspective. But this one, and then...
Who forgot to put Snow White in there?
Yeah. But this wasn't the only problem that occurred on Snow White's Scary Adventures. The other major problem had to do with, what else? That poison apple.
The problem?
Yeah, that's the problem, is they went into fairy tale world and brought back the real apple. No, that's not the problem. The problem was actually that the riders passed by a figure of the witch holding out the poison apple for all to see, and this was originally an actual prop that was used on the attraction, and these apples would very regularly disappear, stolen by the riders of the attraction, so they had to continually replace the apple because people wanted this souvenir, but that was a huge maintenance headache.
Could you imagine having that apple? That would be so awesome.
I mean, I understand why people took it, sure.
It's so cool.
Yeah. Maybe you can find it on eBay and find one that somebody took from long years ago.
$27,000 for this fake apple.
Yeah, that you don't even know if it's really from Snow White.
Yeah, I just painted this in my backyard. Nobody knows the difference. So despite these issues, Snow White's Scary Adventures was a mainstay dark ride for the Fantasyland area. In fact, Snow White's Scary Adventures stuck around after the major 1983 overhaul of Fantasyland. The attraction got a new outside facade that looks like guests are walking into the Queen's Castle. In fact, if you're patient, I believe you're still able to watch through the upstairs window and see the Queen opening the draperies to look down on the peasants below. Guests waiting in line can see a golden apple that, when grasped, triggered a sinister disembodied voice of the evil queen to ring through the hollow halls. There is also an old spell book open to the recipe for the poison apple that poor Snow White eats, leading to her temporary demise. Imagineers also added Snow White into the attraction, so naturally riders weren't so confused by her absence. They were also replacing the prop apple with a parabolic mirror version of an apple, which just saying parabolic mirror makes me sound like an engineer, even though I don't know exactly what that means. I've heard of a parabola, but I just remember hearing parabola between naps in math class.
Yeah.
But essentially, when you grab for the apple now, all you get is a big handful of nothing. It looks really cool, but then you grasp at it and whoop, nothing there.
Oh, man. So the 83 overhaul saw the original beginning to the attraction change. Originally, riders would see the dwarfs mining away inside the cavernous depths, but not so anymore. During the overhaul, the soundtrack was also altered to include the voice of the original Snow White. Adriana, Castellotti. There we go.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think that's how they say it.
Adriana Castellotti.
Good
as
job,
well.
Bud.
Thanks.
But other than that, and other few tweaks here and there, most of the attraction is intact as originally created. During the 50th anniversary of the park, a golden mine car was added as well. Now, Snow White's Scary Adventure has also been added to Tokyo Disneyland, Disneyland Paris, and the Magic Kingdom in Florida. Though the Magic Kingdom's version has now been replaced by a princess meet and greet. Wah, wah. But they also do have, what's it called? The Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, which
yes.
I think is, I would say that it's probably not out of the question to think that that was inspired by that original show scene that they wanted in the first ride when you go in and see the dwarfs mining. Now you've got an entire attraction of that thing down in Walt Disney World, which is pretty awesome in my opinion.
Yeah.
But there's no denying the staying power of the story throughout the world. Everybody loves it from coast to coast, from continent to continent. Snow White's story really does have universal appeal and is a Disney icon in and of itself. Not to mention that this thing does live up to its name. It actually really is kind of scary.
Well, and I'd also like to say that the actual Snow White film, I would argue that, well, this is... maybe aside from Fantasia, there might not be a single animated film that has more Walt in it.
Oh,
yeah.
That
has more Walt personality. So, but yeah, the ride gets a little dark. It gets a little dark with the in the forest and everything, you know. And if you have smaller kids, you might be aware that they could get kind of freaked out because it's a scary adventure, right?
If you have
you
older
think it's
adults.
Too scary?
I don't know. I don't think it's as scary as Pinocchio, because Pinocchio basically says, "This is your mistake. Live with it." Woo!
Whereas I feel horrifying.
Excuse me, I almost had a coughing fit there. I feel like with Snow White, there's just some more scary imagery, especially the witch. That is not something that a lot of little ones may love, but the nice thing is you can close their eyes. And the whole demise of the witch is she's falling off the side of the cliff with the dwarfs going up there. That's a little bit shocking, even though a lot of kids, thankfully, don't understand what's going on there, which I'm grateful
right.
for.
But you have the thunder and lightning, too, which is frightening. Thunder, send a bolt of lightning, very, very frightening me, is what I'm trying to
Galileo.
Say.
Galileo Figaro.
That's the
Figaro,
only...
oh.
Oh, no, there's
Dude,
another...
Dude!
It's another fan conspiracy.
Theory. Fan
check,
theory.
Check the locks on the doors. Yeah?
That song
the queen
is
was
all about Snow White
land?
And Pinocchio.
Oh.
Dude.
There you go. Prove us wrong. Prove us wrong, yeah, fans.
Somebody just... We've got an airtight alibi. Mama just killed a man. Where do we find that on the ride? Peter Pan. Peter Pan, he killed a man because he wanted to be a boy. He just wanted to stay a boy, so he killed the man version of himself. So he's forever a boy.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Life has just
true.
Begun. And now I've gone and thrown it all away. That's the pirates on Peter Pan. Either that, or you could see that that's Toad from Toad Hall. If Mr. Toad hadn't thrown his life away, Mama, ooh, I don't want to die. Sometimes wish I'd never been born at all. Do you know who that is? Monster of the Whale, because his tail gets blown off. Oh.
Oh,
I don't
man,
think
Al,
any of
better,
this is usable.
You need to take a breath, man. Wow, this is a bolt of inspiration. You know how Walt Disney had his Snow White performance? You've got Al putting together the Bohemian Rhapsody as a Fantasyland montage. Wow.
I am John Nashing from A Beautiful Mind right now.
Yeah.
Flashes of color, shapes, light. I'm seeing it all at once. Oh,
this
wow.
Is like
so,
the person who discovered Pink Floyd in The Wizard of Oz.
That person deserves an award.
Yeah.
So regardless of how scary this whole attraction is, it really is still a must-ride for any first-time Disneylander as well as the seasoned annual pass holder simply because of two things. One, it doesn't have a huge line. And two, it's just quaint and precious. So it may not have the thrills of Matterhorn or the popularity of Peter Pan, obviously what does, but Snow White's scary adventure really is worth the ride.
And this attraction really is a tribute to the things that made Walt Disney who he was, and the Disney Studios who they are. He was a fiercely ambitious visionary who would stop at nothing to see a dream become reality. He was a man who wasn't silenced by his critics. He was a man who saw the future and dared to pursue that future, no matter what it took. Snow White's Scary Adventures is a quaint attraction that has and will always be a staple attraction that always belongs in the fold of classic Fantasyland attractions.
And that is the story behind Snow White's Scary Adventures. Harry, that was actually a really fun episode.
Yeah, it was. I love the story of Walt Disney making the film of Snow White. That is such a great story. And to think about how anxiety producing and everything, you know, it is to mortgage your house for a film, and you don't know if it's really going to work out or not. I mean, I don't know if I would be gutsy enough to do that for a dream. Like, would you put your house on, or mortgage your house, or go, like, millions of dollars in debt for a movie you were making?
I did for this podcast, and it's working out pretty well. We've made $0 so far.
Wow, I didn't have to pay anybody to make this podcast, Al. I think you got hoodwinked.
Oh, wait, no, maybe that was a bad idea. That's what I meant to say. No, it was a really bad idea to mortgage my house to fund this podcast.
It'll pay off. Don't worry about it. We're using cutting-edge technology that won't be discovered until the year 3000 when it's played in reverse through a parabolic mirror.
Oh, that's what the parabolic mirror is for. Dude, full circle, I hope that someday people actually look at our podcast and start creating some sort of intertwined storyline that we have supposedly tucked away neatly inside of the folds of this story, even though there's nothing but pure buffoonery at the wheel.
Kanye West's latest album was clearly mirroring every episode of The Backside of Water, and here's why.
even the name of the album is The Backside of Kanye.
What? That'd be a terrible album name.
I didn't even think that one through.
Yeah, it happens.
Oh, and that's exactly how, once I get to the end of writing an episode, I look at it, laugh, and say the exact same thing. I didn't think that one through.
Yeah, that's pretty much my life.
Whoops. Oh, man.
Last 5 years, I didn't think those through.
As you're standing in prison shackles.
Yeah.
Folks,
ooh, wire
we
fraud.
Apologize.
That'll get you.
Did you just say wire fraud?
That's why I'm in these shackles, bro.
Oh, man, Western Union was mad. So yep. Anyway, the reason why we decided to go more on the film history side, I'm going to be completely honest. There's not a ton to go over on the attraction itself. On these mini episodes, sometimes they're a little light when it comes to really cool stories. But the cool story with Snow White is the story behind the attraction. Which is the making of the film. And so that's why we decided to focus so heavily on there. So that's where our focus was. If you guys want to, you can follow us on all of our social media. If you just can't seem to get enough of these two fun little buffoons, I should say fun-loving buffoons. When I say fun, that makes it sound like we're actually fun people. We're not fun people, but we're fun-loving.
True story. We'd love fun, but we are not fun.
We don't know how to produce it. We just know how to have it.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to, just go ahead. And the main ones that we're all over is Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Yes.
Especially for me, I tend to handle, this is Alex, I tend to handle the Instagram. Harry tends to handle the Twitter. And I'm pretty sure that Peeves, the house ghost from Harry Potter, is handling the Backside of Water Facebook group, because there's a lot of ghostly things happening over there.
There's actually a lot of good conversation in addition to the ghostly happenings.
I actually love where our little Facebook group is going. It's growing, thankfully, so if you want to jump over there, just find us, Backside of Water Podcast. Again, it's not going to sync up with all the announcements and stuff with the podcast. We want that actually to be more of a community-driven place. And we've seen a lot of fun community come from that. So for updates and all that kind of stuff, please, please go ahead and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. To join the conversation, jump over to Facebook. And finally, go ahead and check out our sister podcast, Did You Know Disney?, where we discuss everything Disney-related. And that's pretty much where we're at. Harry, do you want to send us off?
Absolutely. So, folks, as you exit, please watch your head and watch your step.
And if you happen to miss your step and hit your head, please watch your language. Goodbye.
Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. Bye.
Bye. Thanks even more than Harry said thanks. Thanks the most.
All right, I think we're done.